Out. I'm Brenda Dennehy.
I'm Julie Haynes.
And this is Left on Red.
Hi everyone and welcome back to Left on Red, the podcast where no topic is off limits and we get through a healthy dose of girl talk. It's like a virtual coffee date with your besties.
Spot on, Jewel. Each week we'll dive deep into a juicy topic that's bound to start discussions and fill up our DMs.
And we've got your back when it comes to recommendations. It could be makeup, movies, fashion or food. We'll fill you in what we've loved and maybe didn't love this week.
Before we wrap things up, we leave you with a motivational quote to carry with you into the week ahead. It might be nonsense, but we will try. Because let's face it, we all need a little extra boost sometimes.
Ready to go?
Let's crack on.
Hi everyone and welcome back to Left on Red with me, Julie, and
Brenda.
Yeah, and today it's a different episode because we have the lovely Clat Wolf. She came up from Cork, one of our own.
Hi, Julie. Hi, Brenda. Lovely to be here.
Thank you so, so much, Clat, for joining us. And you're here to speak about your daughter, Leanne.
Yes. Actually, this is her month. Her birthday and her anniversary is in March. So it's good timing.
It is, yeah. Actually, Brenda reached out to you and it was her anniversary, wasn't it?
Yes, actually. No, I was on the way out to the graveyard. It was the day of her anniversary, yeah.
And you took that as a sign?
I did.
Which was lovely.
Because it happened with the Late Late Show as well. So I thought, it always seems to come up for around that area. So I said I'd do it.
Oh, fabulous. And just to put into a bit of context, sir, we have Clet here with us. And your daughter, Leanne, committed suicide back in 2007.
Was 2007 on the 23rd of March and 2007. We were in Lanzarote at the time. And we got the phone call. It was our son phoned us. At about 12 o'clock at night to say that Leanne was gone. To be quite honest, my husband took the call and we couldn't understand gone. Like, we were saying gone where, and he couldn't say the word that she was dead. And he, at the end, he had to say it, that she was dead. To be honest, I thought she was murdered first. I thought it was a car accident first, but when I realised that she was in the house, I thought it was that she was murdered. Mm. Because I couldn't understand, suicide never even entered my head.
Yeah, because as a mom, I'm supposed to be thinking drink, drugs, them going out in the car, a car crash could happen.
Things like that, like her drink getting spiked or drinking too much or what have you. But suicide never even came into my head. You know, I didn't know anybody really, you know, that I was on that road, to be quite honest.
Yeah, and it's like she was such a happy girl.
Very, very happy, very bold. You know, as a daughter, as a teenager, she was your natural, you know, your normal teenager. I suppose now things have changed for me now because through doing college, I know that, you know, there's, you know, I never realised that, you know, I always thought when teenagers are young, you know, that, you know, their hormones and all this. But it's not really sometimes, you know, they hide a lot.
They do.
And they're good at hiding it. I suppose I was hiding secrets all my life. So she got it from somebody good.
Yeah.
So she had the expert to follow. Yeah. So, yeah.
So you were out on holidays with your husband, Anthony.
Yes, we were
out
in Lanzarote. Yes.
I can't, as a mom myself, Clet, I can't even imagine getting that phone call, being in the country, never mind saying 4.5 hour flight journey.
It was horrendous, to be honest, because we weren't due back for another 3 days. Mm. So it was just horrendous. I think it was the worst flight that I ever in my whole life. To be quite honest, I wanted to die.
Yeah.
You know, my husband went for the balcony to jump off the balcony, you know what I mean? This was like, she was daddy's baby, she was mammy's girl, you know what I mean? And we wasted nearly 7 years for her. So she was just, you know, she was a character. She made us laugh. And I always think if you can make somebody laugh, it's a good quality in someone. And like Leanne was after applying for midwife in England. So, you know, there was plans there, you know. So to get a phone call to say that your daughter is dead and you're in Lanzarote, you know, you're after being on a holiday, sunning yourself and, you know, in the beach and what have you. And it's very cruel then too in another way because all you could think of is that you're on a beach when your daughter was really passing away, you know what I mean? And that was very, very hard to deal with for a very long time.
Cool. And like, there was no signs because I think I heard somewhere that you said the week before you went to Lanzarote, you were actually looking at, was it Deb's dresses?
we were actually to come back. She threw her eye in two and two dresses. One, to be quite honest, she was after breaking my heart for her her friend's grads, and I had to get her a dress made. And I was saying, Leanne, you're not meant to get them things done until your own Debs.
Yeah.
Because her own Debs was coming up. But we went all out at the end. You know, I went all over it. And the dress cost us hundreds. And she was stunning. And you know, but did I know that, you know, instead of like a Debs dress, that I'd be buying a coffin for her, really. You know what I mean? It's a big, big difference from that. Like, you know, it was, I couldn't get my head around it. Like, I remember the, trying to get the flight home. We had to fly to Dublin and, you know, you're broken and you're still on a plane with so many people, you know. And I grew up where all my life, from where I came from sexual abuse, I came from rape, you know. So I was always able to hide my emotions. I was good at that. So with Leanne, I was able to do the same, but my husband wasn't.
And who was at home with Leanne? Like, who?
There was Trina and Anthony. Anthony, my son, is a bit like me. He'd go into overdrive as well, so he kind of took over on that side. And it was very hard for me. Trina, my middle daughter, would have she got alopecia afterwards. And when you read the book after that, my second book, you'll see that she fought two big serious illness. One was a tumour bigger than a mandarin that she had removed that it nearly cost her life. But it was really from the stress of finding her sister.
And
she
saying that her. Your own mother as well passed away a couple of months.
She died 13 months after her. Yeah. And my mum was very fit. My mum used to be down at my house until 4 o'clock every night after Leanne died, because we couldn't cope, I'll be honest. I just couldn't cope with life. I was just hoping to die. I just wanted to die. But I was trying to get up the courage to take my life. It wasn't courage to actually do it. It was courage because of what I was going to be leaving behind. I knew what suicide, now the effects of suicide and how it devastated families.
I think as well, back then with suicide, no one was really talking about it. It was like, people would say, and I don't want to upset you by saying this, it was a selfish thing to do.
Oh, sure, it was actually, that was the thing. I remember when I went down the road of researching it, it's actually, suicide is to commit a crime.
And you know what?
And if 100 years ago, if you tried to take your life and you survived it, they'd have actually hung you afterwards.
Yeah. And actually, in Cork, we actually had the highest suicide rate in the whole of Europe, not even the country.
Yes.
Europe.
But I think, do you know what I discover now, because I work with a lot of people and I go into homes and, you know, I speak in secondary schools and I do a lot of talks on bullying and suicide and hope. Mm. But I find that with suicide, when suicide comes into a family, people focus on the mum and dad.
Yeah.
And sometimes the siblings are, you know, they don't, people sometimes don't reckon that the grief is as severe for them. But I think through Weed and the night of Leanne's death, there was a man called Mac Ryan and he was the guard on duty. And he was the one really that, you know, kind of opened our eyes really that we could have trouble with, you know, with Trina and Anthony because of them not being able to deal with their emotions, really, their loss and the whole lot. So he was a Christian man. And so it kind of opened my eyes that I started looking to my two children because I was afraid. And then I thought, OK, if you focus on someone and there's somebody else there, you know, and they're trying to deal with it on their own, you're going, they would have been no better than what Leanne was.
I know.
They'd be in trouble. So we just tried to keep an eye. My son came close to it, to be honest, Anthony came close to it.
He just couldn't take it.
He just couldn't cope with it. Like, we used to phone him 1 8 at 2 o'clock. He was after driving out to the grave and he was lying across our grave. Imagine we were all over Cork looking for him, to be quite honest. And it was the last place that, you know, because I was saying 2 o'clock in the morning, like, we got out. But I remember when we got out, the gates, they're big black gates, and he was at the parking and the part where the gates are, and I could hear the music. It was Leanne's actually music that he had playing. Yeah. But when we went in, he was lying across her grave, you know, and he was crying. And you see, suicide, everybody carries guilt. Mm. You're guilty because you didn't see it coming and you don't know why they didn't come to you. As a mother, people have said to me, did you blame God? I remember even Mac Ryan, who was the guard on duty, he asked me, was I angry at God? And I said, why would I be angry at something that I didn't think existed? I said, I'm angry at me, I'm her mother. I should have known. No, I'm a Christian woman now. Yeah. I found God in hell, I reckon. And that's where my hope is. But it was a journey.
And
it was a journey.
Just bring it back to the night that Leanne passed away. You were in Lanzarote, and was Trina and Anthony in your home?
No, Anthony actually was out to buy in a duplex in Carrigtwohill, and we followed him. We we were downsizing.
Oh, okay.
So I had a big plan. We were selling the house that we were in. We were in a big huge house. We had a cabin with a hot tub, a sauna, yeah. The works and what have you. But we were downsizing and I was thinking, this is now Dubai. Yeah. We're going to, you know, see the world and what have you. I was 46 and he was 47. We were after working all our lives. We just felt, you know, this was...
And he
was after working up. We were after working up from a corporation house, you know. It wasn't that there's no airs and graces with me, you know what I mean? And we worked from there. We worked from nothing and we built up and... So I had first plans. I'm good at spending. Yeah. My mother used to always say, like, if you gave me a pound, I'd spend 10.
Yeah.
So
thank
God my husband is good for managing because we'd be on the streets. But so we bought a house then down in Carrigtool as well, around the corner from Antony. They bought a duplex. We bought a house and we flew out on the Sunday and we were after arranging for Trina. Trina was after buying a house in Shanakeel. And she came down to stay with because she was still only 18.
Yeah.
Do you know, Leanne was the baby and she was really the baby. Like. Yeah. So Trina came down and she was staying with her and they had a wonderful, wonderful few days. To be quite honest, I was in a mood with both of them. I have to be truthful now because I'm very honest. I flew out Mother's Day. They both were after staying out. None of the two of them were there to wish me happy Mother's Day. They were after giving me their gifts, but that wasn't the point. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, Mother's Day, for years I paid dearly for that.
Yes,
nobody could even mention Mother's Day to me because I didn't even want to hear about it. Because when she phoned then I says, oh, Leanne, when I come back, I said, I'm after calculating how much money you're getting off us a week. She was getting 75 euros a week off us between petrol and all that. I was actually working Marks and Spencer for her. Yeah. I was literally working in Max's Spencer's to keep her in the lifestyle that she was accustomed to. So she got an awful fright. Like she was saying, man, for God's sake. No, I said, oh no. I said, none of the two of you could even make an effort and be there in the morning. I was really the hump. And she was saying to me, go on, tell me you love me, ma'am. Tell me. And it was actually the first time I never said this. Because never would have left that stop me. But I don't know, I think I had her over a barrel.
Yeah.
And you never had Leanne over a barrel.
Yeah, yeah.
So I was thinking, I'm being stubborn here now.
Yeah. And do you look back on that then?
That actually brought me to the railway station to end my life.
Stop.
I went there to end my life. But you know something? After God touched my life, I was able to kind of look at that and put it in the place that it was. I was a mother. I don't grow and she walked in.
Yeah.
Did I do things wrong at times? Of course I did. I could have built a wall with things, mistakes you make. But I loved her. Her father loved her. But it was a long time coming to get to that place, though.
And I'm wondering as well, I know Julie has the letter she left. Did you see any signs of like that she was depressed? She was being bullied because she was being ferociously bullied for
Two years previous, she came in with a black eye. She couldn't hide it.
Yeah.
And me and Trina freaked. We were saying, you know, how did you get that? But she was trying to, you know, say that she didn't know him or have you. And at the end, we got her out of her. And me and her dad and Trina, I remember, jumped into her own car, went looking for this girl. We didn't realise now that there was a whole gang behind it. But, you know, you're only just seeing a small bit of the picture.
Yeah.
And we went to the parents and we told them that if it happened again, that that we'd go further with it. But when you read in her diaries, then it was very sad because it says that she got a black, she got a dick, and that she went to the ground, and that everybody was around, and they were all looking, and they were all laughing. So it was just, to visualise the picture, it was frightening for her. But she was more ashamed that she cried and she cried, and I think that's what really kind of really upset her. And then about a month, I think, before she died, it would have been about a month to 6 weeks, she wasn't after going to school. Leanne never missed a day. Mm. School was, because she was like an only child, so her friends were all in school. She was always in school early. Yeah. We'd have to drive her even when we were in Accomack. We'd have to leave early. She'd be saying, I'm going to be late. She's been there about a half hour before even school would start. But it would be meet her friends and what have you. But what we didn't realise is the bullying was after coming into the school at this stage. And so she went after going to school for 2 weeks. And I was kind of thinking, like, you had to kind of tread on eggshells with Leanne. Because she was very moody. I didn't realise all what was going on in her life. Mm. But like, so I turned around and I was sitting there and I was making a cup of coffee and I was ready to go into work. And I said to her, Leanne, what's going on? So she says, what do you mean? I said, are you going to school? And so she says, just don't start now, ma'am. I said, look, I'm going to say something now, I said. I'm after discussing this with your dad, I said. And we don't care if you're sweeping the streets. once you're happy. Yeah. So if you want to come out of school, I said, we don't care. What if you do? Oh, she said, you'd love this. So I thought to myself, don't say nothing. Because, so, and next, she tipped her phone over to me. Her phone was on the kitchen table. And she started crying. And Leanne would have never really, really cried much, you know. So I thought, I sat down because I said, this is serious, you know, when she's upset and she was trying to get her emotions, you know, under control. And I sat down and I read the text that was on it. The text was vile, you know. It was vile, but it wasn't possible. It was about sex and that she was supposed to be having sex with a couple of boys on top of a washing machine. It wasn't even possible. So I said to her, Leanne, that's not even possible. Mm. Do you know, you have to think now because I'm only seeing a small picture of it. I'm not seeing all what's going on. So I said, that's not even possible. So I said, why would you even just delete her? Why would you even leave that worry you? But it was what she said next. She says, do you understand all my friends is getting the same text about me? And I thought, okay. I said, Leanne, we're going down to the school. And so we went down. Unfortunately for Leanne, her principal was after taking a 12-month leave of absence. And there was another principal there. They hadn't the same, didn't really know Leanne. And so I told her, I brought the phone down and we told her about the texts that Leanne was receiving, that all her friends were receiving. And I said, I feel this is bullying. Mm. And I said, this needs to be sorted. And her words were that the leaving cert was coming up because the leaving cert was in June. And she said that they wouldn't have time for that. So we got nowhere with that.
So she was being bullied in school.
It came into the school
outside,
then, you see.
So started outside the school.
It was outside the school since she was very young. But then it started at her, the school, when you kind of school and her home was a safe haven. But you see the texting and the Bebo kind of put that out then, you know, there was no safe place then. Like, you know,
so Bebo was around then?
Bebo was around then. Sure, it took us weeks to get into her Bebo. And when we got into it, it was two of our bullies were after, is it a message email or whatever they had to do with? And one of them was after writing that I didn't come to your funeral. I know you wouldn't have wanted me there. I know I hated you. I don't know why you never did nothing to me. Rest in peace. I won't lie.
So they actually wrote that after her funeral?
Yeah.
And sent it to her?
But I won't lie now, that was about 6 weeks that we got into it after that. Yeah. I wasn't where I am now.
Yeah.
And I phoned her.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
And I won't lie. I told her I was coming up. She was actually a mother. She was a young mother. And I told her I was going to come up. I was going to deal with her. I'm saying it in a nice way now because we're on air.
Yeah.
And I was going to deal with her, deal with her mother. I says, there wasn't a father on the scene. I was going to wipe out the whole lot of them. I was very broken, but I was very sick afterwards. And I remember her words with me. She said, we didn't stuff the effing tablets down Leanne's throat.
Oh, no.
And I thought, there wasn't even, you know, remorse.
No.
Like these people, the guards visited the day after Leanne, before we even ever got home from Lanzarote, the guards were to all their place because there was horrendous texts on Leanne's phone on the night of her death. Actually, one of them is on the paper that I gave you.
So did he open up the text message that night that he found her?
We didn't. They did. The guards were after reading it, but they said they'd wait for us to come back to show us that, you know what I mean?
I'm just gonna...
You'll just see it's on the 23rd. It gives even the time. It says, you whore, on my nan's soul, you won't. I wouldn't want to bump into you anytime soon. I swear to God, because I'm going to break your face. You whore, you prostitute. And that was actually, so there was kind of a stream of them came in on the night of her death. They reckon that whatever happened that night will come out one day, you know, because we do reckon there was an altercation where, because she was home early and whatever happened, we don't know, but it'll come out one day. You know,
and for those that's not listening, so Leanne actually wrote diaries, many diaries that we actually have with us here.
Like you have another one here now. She came up to me Monday screaming and shouting at me. I was so scared. I'm sick of the lies. I swear I feel so depressed. I wish I had a new life. Do you know, you haven't, these were the things that she was writing. I couldn't understand the diaries at the start, like, because it was like as if she was talking to someone, like, but they said that's the way it were. Like, here you have then, like, on the 16th of February 2005, and just taking them randomly, you know. Well, the past few days have certainly been the worst for me. Monday night, I was in Teddy's. I think that's, they were drinking. I was another name for drinking. Yeah. So, and I bumped into, and she hit me straight in the face. I had a big black eye. I was mortified. I couldn't even hit her back. and now everyone is laughing at me. This is going on too long. I can't go on with this shit no more. I can't live with it no more. I really can't. It's not fair. I didn't even do anything to her.
How many years do you think this bullying was going on?
Well, it was going on about 5 years, probably more, even when you go back over her diaries. Like, you know, you've right, like these, the ones I'm reading now are 2005 and 2006. 2005 would have been the black eye and what have you, but they started off very subtle, you know, ignoring her, or, you know, maybe sending her a text, blaming her for something, and, you know, using an excuse to isolate her. Because in some of Leanne's diaries and in the bigger ones, is like, you have pages, I'm nothing and I'm nobody. And I remember they were actually very hard to kind of think like that. Your daughter is actually writing these things, like, and like she had another one. She was only, I think she must have been only 15 when she wrote this one. Think of what you say to someone; it can leave a lasting effect. I thought it was very deep for someone so young. But like in another part of her diary, she didn't care about the beatings. It was actually the names she hated.
The words.
She just hated the words. Like, there's another part in her diary, it talks like that we were actually living in Raccormac at the time, because that night we seen the condition of her, and Liam was after getting her crucial ligament done in her knee in Shanakeel. So she was only just after getting back driving. It took her a while to get back because it was very sore. But when she came in this night, we were living in Raccormac at the time. Oh my God, she was in a terrible state. Her hair was all coming out in bunches. She had two bald patches, and, you know, me and Trina brought her up and we had dropped in the shower. And, you know, I'll be honest, the three of us were crying because she was saying she didn't know who they were, that there was three girls came towards her when she was heading to her car and that they jumped her. But when you read her diaries, then she'd have dates, names and the whole lot. And she said, I was on the way to the car. I see him coming towards me. And she wrote it in pencil, because I asked the counsellor afterwards. I said, why is it in pencil? And she said, pencil was a time when she was safe. Uh-oh. So she went back to pencil. So she said, I see him coming towards me. I'm not going to run. And then it was the childish thing. I fighted him the best I could. Knee very sore. I thought, girl, like, I remember when we done that through the council, and I remember I was very ill afterwards. I was vomiting. Like, of course you want to murder him, you know.
I'm wondering, did any of them apologise or come clean? Throughout, it's been how many years now?
She's 17 years, actually.
Not one person.
Never.
And can I ask, do you see some of them to this day?
I actually did. At the start, I actually had one of her main, she was being, there would have been about, there was about six, that was really, really, you're talking the top, there would have been two main, and then six, and then you would have had another few, you know, that would have joined in, and, you know, and, but her, there was two main ones, really vicious, like, they really controlled everything. But I had one of them, her sister, actually, down for breakfast one morning.
Down to you to speak to you about?
No, I was down because she was going through a tough time, and I was on a different walk. Then God will test you to see if you're after forgiving at this stage. There was a time when I was starting my walk, with my Christian walk, when Mark Ryan, the guard, you know, he tell us that God could heal you, or he could take away this pain and this loss and give you hope. And I thought, really and truly, for even a little while, I thought, is he going to rise Leanne from the dead? Because that's the only way I could have seen that I could have a life outside Leanne. And God does things differently. So I took a chance and I said, right, after going to the railway station, I knew God was real at this stage, but I didn't think, how could he even be bothered with me? I was a woman that, you know, went through life, you know, from the age of 8 to 11 was sexually abused. I was 17 when I was raped in the Hall of Carcanoe, so you couldn't hide that. Lost two sisters, you know what I mean? And then lost your daughter through suicide. And I was thinking, why would God even want to have anything to do with me? So I ended up going to the railway station to end my life, and I had an encounter with God.
Yeah.
And I knew that God loved me. And you know, from that day, my life turned, because no matter where I go and what interview I do, I know who God is to me. There was no man, there was no woman, there was no husband, there was no children, no counsellor could fix what I needed to fix.
Your broken heart,
It was, you couldn't fix it.
With Leanne writing their names in the diaries, I know you're good friends now with the detective or the guard on the scene. Is there anything that guard could have done?
It was the first time in Irish history that Leanne's bullies were subpoenaed into an inquest. Mm. Not by us, but by the state.
Okay.
So that was the first time that was ever even done. But it was our choice. Okay. We went down the route, so we had a solicitor that was in the mail that said that he wouldn't have to worry about no money, that he'd, that Leanne's story was out to get knows at that stage, and, you know, people were, you know, they knew the background now, and people wanted to help. And he was starting out. The only thing that I didn't like about it is that you'd have to hit him where money was concerned.
Yeah.
And I never wanted it to be about money. It kind of didn't sit right with
yeah,
me.
Yeah, I know.
I wanted to just bring him to court, disgrace him, show him up, you know, for who they were, because there's no way I can forgive them because I hated them with a burning passion. But that hate was really turning into something else. It was, you know, it was eating me up. And I started praying. And I remember Pastor Paul one night, and I went to church, and in front of everyone, congregation, I knew that I stood up and I asked, would they pray, because I had an anger that I couldn't get rid of. And they prayed, and that anger left.
Yeah.
And then God gives you the grace to forgive. So.
Isn't Christianity like a lot of time based on forgiveness?
It is.
All,
like it says in the Our Father, sure. Yeah. If you don't forgive, that our Heavenly Father won't forgive. But it's very easily said than done. You know what
course.
I mean? But I couldn't possibly do it. But God gives you the grace to do it.
Yeah. And I suppose, like I said earlier, Cork is not like biggest suicide rate in the whole of Europe. And like I heard of kids of 14, 15, 16 committing suicide. Do you think that they know what they're actually doing, that the outcome is going to be death? Or do you think it's just nearly like a cry for help for them? Like,
I really... I think when you're very sad and you're very lonely and you're very empty, because I know when I was that way myself, you just want the pain to stop.
You do, yeah.
The whole death thing is not huge to you, because you just want to shut down. You just want things to end. So, like, we did a coffee morning for 8 years. Neil Prendeville paid for it for 8 years. And, like, we had as young as an only child she was. She was 10. And, you know, we had families that lost 3 children, you know what I mean? And I remember there was a family that, and they were all from Cork, and there was it was 2 brothers and a father, and the father left a note, said that he'd a son left and daughter, and the note was that he didn't want to carry another son.
Oh,
so he ended his life. But I think with suicide, you see, and how there can be multiple suicides, for my own, this is only always my own thoughts, is I think that there's so much sadness in the home that comes into the home when suicide comes in, because it's an unnatural death. And I think that, you know, that sadness, people are all trying to deal with their grief and guilt and shame, because that's what comes with suicide, that, you know, some gets lost, really.
Funny you say that, because I actually listened to you there a couple of weeks back, and you spoke, but you went back to Marks and Spencer's to work after maybe 12 months after Leanne's death, and a lady came in and she lost her son. Will you tell everybody this story, because I think it's just a beautiful story.
To be honest, now in Marks I had to kind of run of the place, because they didn't really know where to put me because I was just a completely emotional wreck.
Yeah.
I was actually, I'd say it was the last an hour every day, and I was sent home in a taxi, somebody else would have to bring me, one of the girls. So it was costing them a fortune, really. But they didn't really know what to do. And I was just trying to find God at this stage. I'm trying to find some peace and some understanding of Leanne's life. So I was there this day, and I was in menswear. I could actually go into any department that I wanted. So I was to kind of try to hide. And I was hiding from people, really, because I was ashamed that my daughter was after taking her life. And so I was there to stay, and this woman came in, and she was looking, she had actually a load of boys, I think it was 5 sons she had, and she was getting them dressed, her daughter was getting married, and so I was giving her help, and I love people, I always have, so I was dressing them, I was helping her dress them with the suits, because they were all going to be something in the wedding, and we were chatting away, and she was all excited, and you can imagine, like, and I was just, you know, up front, and I was so broken, I was empty, really, you know, that's the way I felt, just empty, like, and so next, she was saying, it's going to be amazing, I said, if they have 5 brothers, and next she said, they should be 6, and I said, I didn't even really want to ask her, if I'd be honest, because I just didn't want no conversation where death was concerned, and she said her son was after dying of bone cancer. And I thought, oh, please don't ask, please don't ask, please don't even ask how many children I have. Oh, that's all the thought was, wasn't even sorry for your loss. Yeah. All I could think of was, please don't ask me how many children I have, please don't. And then she said, have you children? And I said, I have, you know, I was doctoring in them, and I said, I have 3, I had 3. And she said, did you lose one? It was like we lost them in Duns. Because sometimes it's very hard to say.
I know. Date. Yeah, yeah.
And so she says, I said, I did. So she said, how did she die? So I said, I was actually going to even lie. I was going to say something else, but I couldn't deny her. Mm. I just couldn't. And I said, it was suicide. And she busted out crying. And I thought, oh my God, she's crying up because her son fought to stay alive. And my daughter threw it. And next year she looked up and she was sobbing now. And I was sobbing. We were hysterical. I tell you the truth. We were definitely like the Grim Reapers. And she looked up and she said, I had a whole 12 months to say goodbye to my son. You had nothing. And I thought, my God, what a way to look at it.
Yeah.
Only be a mother say to another mother. Yeah. That knows the walk of a loss of a child. Yeah. I thought I was blown away with it. Like we were hugging each other and we were hysterically crying. And I remember thinking, my God, like I thought she'd look at me and think, what kind of a mother were you that your daughter chose to leave you? You know what I mean? Because that's what it felt like to me.
You were a fabulous mother, Colette, because actually in her note before she committed suicide, she wrote, I could not have picked a better mom.
And she said, Mom, what a woman.
There she goes. Yeah, we have to get that in. What a woman, she said at the end. Yeah. And then she signs off.
But Leanne. I suppose when you've, look, when your daughter takes her life, that's not an easy thing to kind of, all what you taught and held dear and all that you taught that you did right goes right out the window. You know, you have this big sign that says your daughter chose to leave you. So that was the battle that, a lot of the battles that people lose is really, is when their loved ones go, you know, you like my son was guilty because he felt that, you know, she didn't come to him. Trina felt guilty because she was staying down there and she was thinking, where was she? Mm. You know what I mean? Like when you read, like it was Trina found Leanne's diaries on the morning of her funeral because we were only after downsizing. So we had things, you know, in the shed and photographs, and my husband was looking for photographs that Leanne swam with the dolphins. She wanted to do all these things because, you know, they're the last things that you're going to be doing for her, you know, and that the most horrendous thing. Like I remember when we came home from Lanzarote, the day we came home from Lanzarote, I went straight to my mum's because I couldn't even go home. And we went down to Charlie Sullivan's. We would have been very familiar with The Undertaker. Yeah. He would have come in out of actually retirement for Leanne, and he came out for my mum as well. And he would have been my sister. No, he would have started out when my sister died and when my niece died. He would have been there, and he was just a family friend. So I remember going down to Charlie Sullivan, like, and he said he brought us upstairs into a place. He says, "Kate, this is something." No, he said, "I don't know how we're going to even help you in this one, but you're going to have to pick out the coffin." And I remember looking and thinking, like, my God, like I was looking at, you know, you were looking at ones with, you know, the Last Supper and the side. But to me, like, they were just horrendous, you know. And I thought, how could it get from a dead dress to picking out a coffin? Like, it just didn't make sense to me. And I remember on the night of her removal, her buddies actually came to her removal.
Six of them?
There was a lot more than six, but they were kind of bang around, hang around in a gang. But they kept two of her main buddies actually stood up. But you see, I knew one of them now because of the time that she got the black eye that we went to the house. So she kept on going up to the coffin to look at Leanne and be carried back down and what have you. I remember looking. I remember I didn't shed a tear at Leanne's funeral because there was no way I was going to shed a tear. I was waiting until Leanne was looked after.
Yeah.
You know, and there was nobody going to see me, you know, throw myself down a coffin or what have you, you know what I mean? I'd rather chop off my own head.
Yeah.
That's the way I was brought up, you know what I mean? That you don't, you know, you keep yourself together. And I remember, like, when she went up the third time, Charlie Sullivan came down to me and he said, Colette, Charlie was the undertaker, and he said, he says, Colette, I'm asking him to I'm removing him because there was hundreds, you know, when somebody young dies, there's a big turnout because people, you know, mothers, you know, they have no ear or what have you, and people make that effort.
They're to support,
people
are
kind. So Charlie Sullivan put him outside. He said, "You're not allowed in anymore." So, but I remember the hardest thing was that when they cleared everybody out of the removal home. And they closed the door and there was only me. I left my mam and my daughter-in-law, Deborah, and my son-in-law, Edward. That's all that was there. And there was me and Anthony and Trina then and her dad. And Charlie said to us, he said, you can close the coffin if you like. screw down the thing. And I remember thinking, there is no way possible in this lifetime could I ever do anything like that, you know, screw my daughter into a box. But I remember my son and my husband, they'd done it. My son, him afterwards, like I said, oh, how could you have done it? He said, I didn't want nobody else to be the last people to be near us. So it was Anthony and my son both done that. You know, these are the things that, you know, I tried to put out there, that for a person that's thinking of taking their life, you know, this is what's left there. This is what the parent have to, or the siblings, or the nannies, or the aunts, or the friends have to look at. You know, I tried to put out there, you know, that the person is not going to see the flowers. Like I draped Leanne's coffin so you couldn't see the coffin. It was white roses. It was completely covered in white roses. Mm. It was like a blanket, because I couldn't even bear to even look at that coffin. But they're the things that I try to make real when I'm in the secondary schools, when I speak to the young people. You know, I tell them, you know, you're not going to be there for the music. You know, like, you're not going to be there for when, you know, people are crying for you and what have you. But I says, when your family will close their door on the last day, then when they buried that, when they buried their loved one, they closed their door and their lives dies to the way that it was. And they never, like, I tell them that my daughter is only alive now by the grace of God, that she, you know, she fought two seriously illness that, you know, nearly cost her life. My son nearly ended his life because he couldn't cope with it. My husband nearly died a couple of times from sickness, and I had cancer removed, all from, you know, trying to get through a grief. And I said, only that God stepped into our lives and changed our story. Mm. Otherwise, I wouldn't be alive here today.
And just to bring it back to the night that she passed away, obviously you were in Lanzarote and you got the phone call. I remember you saying that you asked your son, I think, to put the phone up to her ear.
I knew, you see, I'm very graphic now, so I'm very straight. I knew what death was.
Yeah,
I had lost two sisters and I had lost a niece. So I knew that by the time I got back from Lanzarote, the child that I left wasn't going to be look like the child that was my Leanne. Mm. So I knew. So all I had was between that phone call, and she was still warm.
Yeah.
Because she was all tucked into her quilt in her, and she had Frances morning coat, my sister that died. She had her morning coat on. And I just said to my son, I says, Auntie, clear everybody out the room before they take her. I said, clear everybody out the room. And first they didn't want it because, you know, everything is procedure, everything. And I said, Mark Ryan came in, and he was just a lovely man. I said, please. I said, leave my son go in and close the door. I said, and I just want to spend that little bit of time with my daughter. And I could still hear my daughter screaming, Trina. And they were after sedating her.
Oh my gosh.
Imagine that, the sedation didn't even work. But I saw, and all I could think of was, you know, the pain that they were feeling, the pain that my son was feeling. You know, they were trying to hold it together, and they were worried about their parents coming back, you know. So I was on the phone to my son, and I just said, Anthony, close the door. So he closed the door. So I said, put the phone up to her ear. And he put the phone up to her, and I said, Leanne, Mammy and Daddy are on the way home. It's going to be okay.
I
knew that it was never again going to be okay. You know, I knew that, but I just wanted her to hear that, you know, we love her.
I know.
And that, you know, that she was loved. But that was the hardest part, I'd say, you know, to deal with. I think for any mother, you bring him into the world.
Yeah.
And you're there, really, you're nearly the first to hold her, even though Anthony was the first to hold the aunt, to be quite honest. But her dad held her first. And but I remember thinking, you know, if it's a mother's choice, I'd rather be the last person to hold her, to see her going out the world, rather than, you know, what we had to face when we came home, because she didn't look like the daughter that we had. When you can see with her photograph, so she's stunning, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But when life is taken from you, suddenly it's an abnormal death. They don't look like who they're meant to look like. Yeah.
You yourself, like, you, for anyone listening, your main thing is, like, you've a book there, there's always hope. Your message to people is there is always hope. And
well, we wrote the first book, that's with Hatches, and their third biggest publisher in the world, and that's If I Could Hold You Again.
Yeah.
And that tells from the age of 8, my story, right through to finding God. Mm-hmm. And then there's this book, There's Always Hope. This book tells the story of, you know, of the journey that Trina's not really much in the book, only on the night of Leanne's death, because when the book, when I told her, I said, Trina God told me I'm going to write a book. And she said, yeah, she said, he want to learn you how to read and write first. So she's very quick. So I wrote a book, and really, truly, it wasn't really much thing. Me and my friend from work, Patrice, she was doing the dictation for me, and she was Polish, but she's in Ireland longer. So you can imagine now, yeah, someone that can't spell and someone that's poor. So we put something together, and my husband sent it off to, I got fed up near the end of about quarter way through it. And I said, my husband will start out. So he sent it off to a few different publishers, and we had two responses. One was from Hatchet, our biggest in the world, and the other were from Northern Ireland publishers. So I phoned Trina. I said, Trina, I'm after getting to a... I said, we're after sending off the book. And your dad sent it off to different publishers. Mother, I have friends that's published and they can't even get published.
Yeah.
So I says, well, Trina God didn't tell me nothing like that. I says, what in the name of God is in that book? I hope I'm not in it. Mm. So I had to take her out of it. The other part, only just left her in for what happened on the night. So then when the book came out, she was cribbing because she said, oh, it's all about your son.
Yeah. My son.
So I said, you can't win. Yeah. So the second book, there's a lot in there about Trina, about her journey. And then there's a lot in there about different people. I tell their story and then they also tell their story.
And I hear you stand in front of the mirror and you say, I'm one hot mama.
And you know, for years, I used to always, you know, when I look at the mirror, and even for the first time, I was after getting the weight down and keeping it down for 3 years before Leanne died. It was actually... the first time, because I don't know, it's from sexual abuse. You know, food was my
comfort.
That's what I always went to. But I remember when Leanne died, like I was the tinnest that I was. I was about into size 10, 12. But now I put up the weight and I never liked myself when I'd look. But now I look in the mirror and I say, you're one hot man. And I'd be saying to my husband, I say, you're very blessed to have me. I went to, I left Marks and Spencer's in 21 and I said, all right, God taught me how to read and write, which he did, just the very basic, because he said, you know, God is not a magic wand at all. He'll give you the base and then you have to work for the rest. Yeah. So I said, I'll go to CSN, out in Tramore roundabout, the campus. So I went there and I did the Back to Education Initiative. And when I finished that, I actually wrote the second book and did the cover the whole lot myself. Had no one to... So it was great. The laptop was brilliant. You have a spell check and everything. And then I went on to do social studies. And now I'm in I'm just finishing my first year in UCC. I'm doing a bachelor's in science in youth and community. So, because I'm working with young people. So I want to know more about them, you know, the way they think. And you know, not only for that, because I work with, you know, people that are alcoholics, people that are, I was nearly, you read in the first book, like we never touched a drink after Leanne for months because I was afraid of my life because I came from alcoholism. So I knew the gene was in me because long ago when I'd go out, if I had a drink, I never went out to kind of social drink where my daughter, Trina, would have had a glass of wine and she could say, I used to want to go from A to C straight away. Yeah. I never wanted to do the middle part.
Yeah. Exactly. And I think before I finish up, one of the main reasons when we were so wanted to have you on the podcast as well is because we were kind of chatty about social, like she had Bebo back then, but words hurt.
Yes.
You know, I accidentally overdosed. There was other stuff going on, but stuff led me to doing it.
Yes.
Julie herself has had like abuse on social media online. So the message out there is like, you know, these words hurt. They hurt Leanne.
Words, you know, look, we're human beings. What happened, Leanne? And Julie and Brendy, you're younger now than me. I'm 63 now. I don't care what they say.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. I'm over that. Yeah, yeah. Do you know what I mean? But we still like to hear nice things.
Yeah.
Do you know, like I think, like, if you have nothing good to say about something, don't say nothing at all. And I think a lot comes from it that when somebody's doing well, and they're doing right, and people get jealous.
It's inevitable. Yeah.
And they get jealous, and then they decide, or I'm going to send a message in there, wherever, if it's Twitter, if it's Instagram, or that hurts, you know what I mean? Who do you think you are? You're not even that good looking, or what have you. Like, I heard I was coming up, gee, you won't believe the efforts I had to roll. I had to roll it until I pulled up in the car there. So I says, I was looking through your day, and I was saying, no.
Do you think let hurt people hurt people? Like, do you think, like, Leanne's bullies are...
I do, I honestly do. I think, you know, I think there have to be something really wrong going on in somebody's life for to cause pain to another person, because you couldn't, you'd have to be, you know, you couldn't be in the right place. When you look at bullying now today, and especially cyberbullying, when you look at cyberbullying now at the moment, like, you there's... Ireland actually is, because I'm doing a kind of a presentation on there at the moment for college, and there's actually, we're actually the highest for the cyberbullying. I don't know why we are. Are we a country that really wants to pull our own down, you know, when they're doing, it's sad that we're going to be known for that. But like with cyberbullying, like, it's very easy for them to come in and leave a horrible remark.
Absolutely,
and they can step away. They don't have to face anyone. They don't have to deal with anyone. You know what I mean?
Keyboard warriors.
And I think then there's a lot of bystanders.
Yeah.
And you have that effect, the bystander effect then, because there's a lot of other people sees that remark. And they should come in and say, be nice here. You know, that's not nice. Because a bully won't like being told. Usually bullies don't work with one. They're usually groups. A bully will always, it's always a target will be the person, an individual, but it's usually a group. So there's usually a group that's sitting discussing that, maybe Julie now, whatever, this little group are discussing, you know, who does she think she is? Well, she thinks she's great now because she has this many followers, or Brenda thinks she's brilliant now because, they have this, or they have this lovely car, or they have the, but there's a group of them, they're involved, you know what I mean? And then they decide, you know, throwing a little horrible little word to hurt, and it does hurt. And when you're younger, it hurts more. And I think bullies know when you're vulnerable, because that's when they hiss.
On your final word for on the bullies, any bullies listening, what would be your message?
My message would be to nobody goes out, I hope, to deliberately hurt someone. But if you are that person and you're saying a horrible word, even a negative word, even excluding someone, even, you know, there's all forms of bullying, if it's cyber bullying from internet to Bebo to all, you know, not Bebo to
Instagram,
TikTok, Facebook, you know, if it's face to face bullying, you know, I'd say to them, you know, you'll meet these people again. And unfortunately for Leanne's bullies, Leanne took her life. We're 17 years down the road, and Leanne's bullies have not got away from Leanne's story. Her story still lives on. So every time when Leanne, if a book comes out, or if there's a TV show, or an interview with you two lovely ladies today, Leanne's story is back out there.
Yeah.
And it's related to bullying and suicide. That, you know, there's a consequences that when you take an action to bullying, you'll pay a price. And there'll be a price one day that it'll catch up with you, and you'll pay that price. Leanne's bullies are paying a heavy price now. I believe they are, because it has never gone away from them. I know that if it was me, I would be cringing every time, because even if it was just stand back and do nothing. Leanne had very good friends.
Yeah.
Do you know, she had Joanne, she had Laura. She had lovely friends. You know, it wasn't, but there was some that were just... Jealousy is the biggest thing. And I would say to those bullies, if you have an issue, push it down, get rid of it, seek help for it, because it will come back and bite you in the face, and you'll pay a very, very high price for it, for your actions. It mightn't be the price that Leanne's bullies are paying for it, but it'd be a price that whoever you're saying a nasty word to, or whoever you're being disrespectful to, one day you'll face them, or one day your children will go through that, or one day a friend will go through it, or yourself will go through it, and you will feel how it feels to have the shoe on the other foot, and it will come back and haunt you.
Absolutely. And on that note, Clet, we'll leave it there. Thank you so much for coming in to talk to
no
us.
No worries.
If you have been affected by Clet's story, we leave some resources in the show notes, and please seek help.
And before we go as well, Clet, your book, There's Always Hope, where can people purchase it? Is it online, Amazon?
It's on Amazon. Then I can actually get the two books, You Are Not Alone, If I Could Hold You Again, and There Is Always Hope.
To quote Leanne again, Clet, what a woman. What a woman.
Do you know,
so much, Clet. Thank you. Pleasure to meet you.
Thank you.